What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat! Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little passage of business, you're dead meat.
Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast, an extension of the YouTube channel Dead Meat. I'm James.
I'm Chelsea, and we're boyfriend and girlfriend, and we like to get scared together. So before we get to this week's very special guest, I want to talk about our sponsor for this episode, Empty Faces.
Empty Faces.
Yeah, it's a monthly subscription box, but it's so much more than that. It's a creepy story that gets mailed to you in installments, and you are an active participant in the story.
Yeah, this is not a box of stuff that you're getting and just like putting on a shelf.
Looking at it and thinking, this is cool, and then you put it somewhere. No, this is stuff that, you know, you have stuff to decode. There's weird newspaper articles and journal entries. It's cool because, you know, we live in a very digital age, and we like to kick back with a movie or TV show, but sometimes it's fun to do something that's very tangible and kind of a bit more removed from screens. And that's what this felt like. We just had all this stuff spread out over our kitchen table. We were pouring over all these weird journal entries and stuff. It was a lot of fun. Like, you could do this with a significant other, friends, by yourself. You could really creep yourself out and do it by yourself. Scary. It's a scary story.
It's a scary thing, which is great. Yeah. And yeah, it was just a great couples activity. What did we get there? Because it's not just like letters and stuff.
There's little trinkets in here too. So this is a moon pendant.
Yeah.
And it told us to wear this while we were sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bundle of sage to cleanse the air of bad spirits, bad vibes.
Yeah, so it's a fun, mystery, spooky thing that, like, you're, like you said, an active participant in.
Yeah, so if you want to try it, they only accept 200 new members a day. So go to their website now and apply, emptyfaces.com. And bonus, if you want 10% off your first box, use the code DEADMEAT.
That's right.
All one word, dead meat, like the show.
Dead meat. Yeah. It's us.
Yeah, yeah. So,
at emptyfaces.com.
Emptyfaces.com.
Code word. Dead meat.
Dead meat. Do it. It's
nice.
Fun. And
it's a lot of fun.
It really is. Like, I'm not BSing you. It's really fun.
Yeah, we literally sat down, like, spent an evening doing this. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. All right. On to the show.
That's right. All right. So now, happy to introduce our guest, film composer John Massari. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm
so excited.
Yeah, this is going to be so fun. So what we've kind of come up with, since John is a composer, you probably all know him as a horror composer. He did. What movies have you done that our audience would know?
Well, right off the bat, in the horror genre proper, that I can talk about right now,
yes,
are some things that happened in the past. Obviously, the classic Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And one of the installments of the Puppet Master series called Retro Puppet Master.
Yes, that's the sixth movie, but takes place first chronologically, at least,
mm-hmm.
out of the first like six movies. It's the first one.
Most recently, the end of last year coming into this year is a Bigfoot movie.
What's the title of that one?
It's called Cherokee Creek.
Cherokee Creek.
Ooh, it takes place in Texas. It's a lot of fun. It tested well. I know when I first saw the rough cut,
mm-hmm.
This will give you some insight into the business. When you see the first rough cut, some horror movies you go, oh my God, this has problems. So you know, and you want to rewrite the script. You want to say, well, why didn't they just take Training Day and just switch out all the characters with serial killers or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, why did you try to do this thing that's not making sense? And it's like, it takes so much work,
mm-hmm.
After the fact to bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't mention which movies I've worked on that are like that. My names are not on them. I've just been called in to help.
Yeah.
This is, hi. Look at this.
A fixer situation.
Yeah.
Look at this. Yes. We have to. It's coming out like next year. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So luckily, but with this one and a few other movies I've worked on recently that they're not up for discussion, unfortunately. You just look at it and you go, oh, wow.
Great.
You guys are. You just got it going on. This is just so. It is. This is like I can work with this. You know.
It's interesting to hear that you're being brought in because you're not an editor. You're a composer.
No.
So it's interesting that you get brought in when a movie's still at a stage where, oh, no, this needs some work done. Like, this
oh,
needs
and
a
they
serious
will ask you,
overhaul. Yeah.
What do you think of this scene? We're thinking of getting rid of it.
Wow.
Were you
dude,
like,
I'm here to make music.
Yeah.
Were you scared? Did it make you laugh? Did it, you know, did it affect you in the ways that we want it to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, well, let me see. If it was me, I would just focus on this aspect on it and then go to the other one. But that's just me, you know, because, you know, I tell every director, I can direct and produce any movie after it's been shot.
Yeah, right.
You know, because taking it, let me tell you, taking it from a story idea, making a script, planning out shots, but is not a small task.
No.
It is not an easy task whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyone that can do it marginally successfully, in my opinion, has accomplished quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because
yep.
there's a lot of things you could do to kind of put it together and make it work.
We always say that because we often do episodes on movies that are not considered the best. Mm-hmm. And we like to make fun of them and kind of poke at them. But then we always say, they made a movie. We didn't. We're just sitting here talking about it. Like, we didn't. And it's hard. Like, we both, you know, went to film school. Making a movie from scratch is so hard. Even making something crappy from scratch is so hard. I don't think people realize.
Think of yourself as a captain of a ship. You have to have a crew that looks up to you and wants to accomplish the best, not just for you, but for the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an art in itself, to get everyone on your side to follow along. I know when I do music production, I get really great people together. I go, here is our outcome. This is what we're working toward. And you all know what to do in your specific field of expertise. Let's just all make sure we keep on base, because this is what I'd like to accomplish at the end. You know, so for a filmmaker that has to do that with actors, with technicians, with other artists and writers and things like that, it's, you know, it's not for the squeamish.
Yeah, agreed. So I think what I would really like to do, and this was your idea, and I thought that this was such a cool way to talk about some movies that people requested to have us talk about with a composer. Mm-hmm. You picked some movies to talk about.
Yes,
where specifically you haven't seen them,
mm-hmm.
but you have listened to the score.
Right.
And
yes.
These are movies we've all seen, like we've seen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be really fun to kind of go back and forth and talk about what to you sticks out about each score, mm-hmm. and kind of what you get from that score and almost, you know, seeing if you're able to envision that movie in your head and maybe kind of picking apart what makes them effective. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's very easy.
Yeah.
To do. Well, first of all, I want to thank your listeners and your viewers, your subscribers, for coming up with such really good suggestions.
Right, deep cuts.
There were so many of them.
Yeah.
I had to, like, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to process elimination. I'm going to make it challenging for myself and for all of us, and pick the movies that I have not seen specifically. And I picked one composer I went to school with. I'm sorry, maybe that's favoritism. I don't know.
That is totally fine.
But he just does such incredible stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, every time I say, okay, it's Christopher Young. So Chris Young is very, very, very talented. And when I listen to his music, it's basically him and Bishara and David Newman also.
Okay.
I listen with great interest. And I like listening to the music by itself without the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we strive to do is make a musical piece of music.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter for what genre, that's going to work for this, the scene that you're doing, and elicit all the emotion that you're supposed to listen to. And then you can sit back and listen to it, close your eyes and listen to it, and you can come up with your own scenario, your own visual.
I think that's why it's so cool you haven't seen these, because
yes.
I just want to know what's going on in your head while you're listening.
Where do we
to
start?
Them.
Well, I'll start from the top of the list.
Sure.
Number one, Insidious by Joseph Bishara. Now, I know I've become acquainted recently with Joseph the past about a year and a half, and I listened to this, and what I like about it is that he has these terrifying and brilliant textures. He makes use of what's called a prepared piano. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's a piano that has been, I don't want to say broken, but altered to sound differently. Like they may put nuts and bolts between the, you know, there's a piano,
cool.
right? And there's the cables that go across the soundboard. Yeah. They'll put various materials inside and they'll play around with it to see, you know, that boing, 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 like that. And maybe there'll be a sympathetic vibration with something else, like maybe a piece of wood or a cork or, like I said, nuts and bolts and what have you. And things that will rattle on top of the keys.
Oh,
so
cool.
He will, I could just tell, they aren't like samples of prepared pianos. He probably arranged to, after listening to it, he probably arranged for his own special setup, so it's going to have a very unique sound. So what Insidious, what really strikes me is you have these horrific, terrifying textures of music that go through that if you almost don't not want to see what it accompanies.
Yeah.
You know, that's how terrifying it is. And then all of a sudden he'll draft everything out to a portion that's very tonal and thematic, and it's like it's almost like a reward. And you could tell a lot of care was put into the beautiful part as much as the terrifying part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's some crazy strings in there that, like, yeah, just give you anxiety listening to it.
Yeah, and it's I just made a note to myself. And we're just commenting on the music. I have not seen the films at all. And what's great is that now this is going to be on my new playlist, and hopefully some of them are on Netflix or Hulu, because that's all I know how to operate. That's the closest thing to changing the channel, like an old TV, you know. The next one was Conjuring, The Conjuring 2. Now, what I like about that is, like Philip Glass for Candyman, he chose to have a choral texture be its center point, which can be very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just think, you're surrounded by a bunch of people, and depending on how they're singing, it can almost be, you know, terrifying and judgmental.
You said they meant the world to you. This is what you'll be leaving behind.
He uses the choir in such a way that's terrifying, and then it comes out, and he has soloists sing also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, and I can't even imagine what the story is about, but because it's like, oh, it's very seductive. There's a solo female voice in here, and I'm trying to guess what the text is. I don't know
if it's
Latin.
Interesting, because, you know, going back, I kind of want to talk about both these just because they are the same composer. So in Insidious, when you talk about this, like, was it an altered piano?
Yes.
It makes me think of, and weirdly enough, the scene I'm thinking of is not a scene accompanied by the score. It's accompanied by a Tiny Tim song. Is the end. It's, which Tiny Tim is it?
Tiptoe through the Tulips.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this demon who is Joseph Bishara, I believe. He's
the Darth Maul demon?
The Darth Maul demon.
Oh, wow.
And he is like, what is he? He's like operating this crank and sharpening his nails. I can imagine him just sitting there with his long nails playing a creepy piano like that.
And what's fascinating to me, I can't imagine that any of these two films were temp tracked with something else. And if they were, he threw it out.
Yeah.
Something stood out to me when you were describing the music from The Conjuring, and that was just the use of the choir and the female voice and kind of the femaleness of it. And that movie is a family with all female children. The whole
is there
family.
A spoiler alert in here?
No,
okay,
no, 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 no. It is a lovely, darling family of the mom, the dad, and I forget how many girls they have. A bunch.
Like four.
It's one of my favorite. I always think I like that dynamic in movies for some reason. I think of Pride and Prejudice and things like that, where they have like the beleaguered dad with like five girl daughters. But I love, so that's interesting that the femaleness of that score.
Now, Insidious has several incarnations, correct? Is there more than one?
I think there are three at this point.
Yeah.
My goodness, that's wonderful.
There's so many movies in that controversy.
I don't think Insidious is part of the controversy.
Is it not?
No. It was just made.
Is it
James
the similar? Is it the same team?
I think James Wan. Yeah. Did both of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that would make sense with the same composer.
So there's no crossover of like Alien and Predator.
No. Great example.
Which is so cool.
Yeah. Oh hell yeah, dude! I just finished covering Predator. I love Alien Predator. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think he can do enough of them.
Yeah. I agree. We got another new Predator coming
out. I still want to go to the Predator planet.
Oh.
See what it's like.
Oh, yeah. Have we seen?
Gravity's got to be heavier. It's hotter there. I don't know.
I didn't know you were such a big Predator fan.
Are there lady Predators?
Yeah. When are we going to get some lady Predators?
I think in the expanded universe there are.
In the comics
and stuff that I haven't divulged in yet. How do you feel about Alan Silvestri's score in the Predator movies?
The new one or the original one?
The original one, yeah.
This is how I feel about it. When I saw it, this is how I listened to it the first time in the movie theater. And I took, I have a confession to make. I took a Sony Walkman.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. I thought you were going to say I took a substance and went and saw it.
No.
I took a judgment free
zone. Sony Walkman is not a substance.
Yeah.
It's like an analog audio cassette recorder. It's like a mechanism. It's this plastic thing with tape on little reels you put it in. And
it's like the voice recorder app on your phone.
Yeah.
So I took that with me,
yeah,
and it had this beautiful stereo microphone. I just sat with it. I just like listened to it quietly. I did that with Ghostbusters too. Ghostbusters has an incredible score in that the timing is absolutely perfect.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
The comedic timing of that is worth great study. That's one of the things that made that movie very successful is the timing of the music. Not only is it great music, it cuts in, picks up, slows down, speeds up. Perfectly.
Yeah, that's something most people wouldn't think about, like with comedy.
No, it's like there are just like certain things that happened, and I ripped off every single one of Elmer Bernstein's moves.
Yeah,
for when I do comedy, I just think of those hours of listening to not even watching Ghostbusters, but like nine times and listening to the score. You know, really helped with comedy because comedy is. Very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult. As difficult as horror. Because to set up a good scare is not easy.
Yeah, they're the two things that are really trying to elicit a response from the audience.
Right. Okay, we're going to go to Sinister, to Chris Young.
Oh, yeah. Sinister.
Okay.
Your boy, Chris.
Here's what's interesting. I don't even have a clue what it's about.
It is about my nightmares.
I'm thinking, ha-ha, you know, the guy with the mustache.
That would be so funny if that's what he did, but actually he's just like...
Yeah, we nicknamed him Mr. Spooky Face.
There's a person.
Oh, yeah, God. He's Bagul is his name. He's a real creepy-looking dude.
And so let me guess. Is it like... It's not a monster. He's like a real person that's like dangerous.
No.
No.
He is supernatural. He's humanoid, but he's supernatural for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Well, okay, that was your guess was kind of like... Maybe that was influenced by the title as well. But like, what does the music make you think of?
Okay, well, here's what the piece that I listened to.
Yeah,
it had what we call found sounds. Like there are, it may be sounds of like someone talking in an elevator shaft, and maybe some kind of mechanical noise, and they're all collected and like. How can I put this together in a musical way?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was fascinating to me.
Oh, cool!
That's what Chris Young did. And you know, there's a classical composer by the name of Karlheinz Stockhausen, this German composer, and his technique was. Of course, he was a classical music. He knew how to write a piano sonata, but when he wanted to create music, it was like sonic landscapes.
His first performances were met with horror and confusion as audiences struggled to understand music lacking conventional harmony.
And so he didn't have digital audio workstations, but he had tape. And he would do things to the tape in ways that when he played it back, it was like insanely interesting. Like he'd record a trombone playing as loud as he possibly can for as long as he possibly can. Then he took that tape and put it on a kind of like a metal table where he can cut across, cut on a bias. Mm-hmm. And the bias would go on for like many feet. And so when this like super loud noise played, it was like, it had a completely different character.
Well, it reminded me of Sinister.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like messing with, he's like finding film and like old tape reels, yes, and like having to mess with them to see like what's really on them and everything. And
so it's so interesting that's what you grabbed from that is like found things and altering tapes and things like that, because that's a big part of that movie. Yes.
It's
so cool.
Chris, if I had a hat, I would take it off. And by the way, Chris is a very wonderful person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, his other credits.
Yeah.
Hellraiser.
Yes.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
So should we move on to It Follows?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Now, It Follows is composed by Disaster Piece, also known as
Rich Vreeland.
Yes, Rich Vreeland. And I got to say, when I heard the main title, I noticed right off the bat, it may be subconscious, but there's a nod to the Twilight Zone theme. It just kind of occurred to me. I have no idea what It Follows is about.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a modern day a storyline, correct? I saw a vintage car.
Yeah,
I didn't see a trailer. I just saw like images.
It's kind of ambiguous as far as
like when
its time.
It's weird. Kind of it exists in a weird because some of the characters have cell phones, but it looks like it could also be the late 80s. It's very weird.
Yeah,
it came out a few years ago.
And I love this because you guys have seen it and I haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like your two kids are saying, oh, yeah, this is great. This is, you got to see it because it has these things.
It was shot literally in my hometown. Like,
seriously.
Like my friend's aunt's house is in it, in the movie. It's very weird watching a horror movie that takes place in your backyard, pretty much.
Well, when I was listening to it, I listened to the main title and I was very, very, very happy at what I heard because it had like a pedigree to it. I could just tell there was influences from like what we used to call progressive rock.
Hell yeah.
Right? Right. Emerson, Lake Palmer and things like that. And I'm listening to like, oh my gosh, that sounds like a Farfisa organ. And that sounds like this, that, you know, it was the textures, to say that it's just electronica, I think does it a disservice because I think what he's done is he's taken that medium and has created some awesome textures in music. And there's this creative noise manipulation that he has in it that's very effective. Mm-hmm. And I just finished something this afternoon that had that element, and it's the most fun thing in the world to deal with it. But what you want to do is you want to find things that are effective, and sometimes you have to create them yourselves. And there's all kinds of ways, you know, if it's like in my house, I'm going, wait a minute, my refrigerator is making a really weird sound. I have to record that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was reading an interview with Disaster Piece, uh-huh, and he was saying that they were working on the movie and then it got accepted into Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
And so their timeline basically was just halved. And so he had to a lot of it was temp stuff that they just liked, and they used a lot of that temp stuff to kind of make the final thing. I think it was kind of sometimes that trap you fall into. I know that's happened to us where we make something and we just put it in a temp track and then you realize I actually just kind of like this, and it's hard for anything else to sound
well
good.
That makes sense because oftentimes when a film's finished, it's like there's a fire alarm that goes off. It says we have to like get this has to be out in the market, mm-hmm, within a certain amount of time or we're losing our window.
Mm-hmm.
And I've helped prepare films for distribution. And they said, okay, we got distribution. All these markets want it, but we have to be consistent. We have to give that score. And so it's like you basically have to use it, do a knockoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like everyone's done it. Mm-hmm. Everyone's done it. And it's here's what's not fun about it. It's just when you use something, you're hearing something that's like very inspired and very awesome piece of music, and I go, shoot, I got to do something like that. But I got to do it in a shorter amount of time. Or whatever. You just get into it, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, I have to catch myself. I go, wait a minute, that's not really my music. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kind of copying all the moves of two different, probably a dozen different composers that I use to create that score. Sometimes I mash up. Sometimes put one score from one movie and on top of another creates an interesting texture. So I have to do that now. I have to make that happen from scratch.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, it's long hours.
Yeah.
That's just what it's all about. There's a composer I admire very much, Michael Giacchino. He does banker's hours. And he works so efficiently. He composes for 8 hours, but he has teams of people that pick the ball up from after him. Mm-hmm. And often, sometimes, I know with me, just because I can't leave well enough alone, I not only compose the music, I will do all the sequencing, creating, and production the music, and sometimes I'll mix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been very blessed to have gotten tutelage from very great audio engineers and music mixers that have helped me and still help me. I still send them something. I go, is this going to work? And they'll say, oh, you got to trim this and trim that. They'll tell me what to do. Still to this day, which, you know, is always good. It's always good to have someone check your work.
Yeah.
never be above that. So I can understand with Rich, that's how he had to do it. But whatever I heard sounded pretty damn good.
Yeah, and it's funny that you kind of mentioned being inspired by stuff that, okay, this already exists. Now how do I make this myself? Mm-hmm. I think they were really inspired, or he was inspired by John Carpenter.
So
it was, okay, well, how do I do that but not have it be John Carpenter?
Right.
And I think it was, successful, if it didn't sound like that to you.
Because all this is working together, because we got Candyman coming up next. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we have Phantasm. Now, we've talked about John Carpenter. And do we dare say that John Carpenter's theme to Halloween was modeled in some part by Mike Oldfield from Tubular Bells?
Oh, Tubular Bells.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I used to always get those two mixed up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it. By the way, Mike Oldfield is still making music. He had an album come out last year.
Oh, really?
2017, yeah. Yeah,
I listened to all of Tubular Bells the other day when I was researching for this.
Like, talk about progress.
Even Vangelis is still making music.
Wow.
You know, with Tubular Bells, here's what's interesting about Tubular Bells. You associate it with The Exorcist, mm-hmm. a little girl that's being, possessed. But when you really go deeper into it, and you listen mm-hmm. to music by itself, it's actually beautiful.
Yeah.
It's pretty. Great.
We get like 25 minutes in, you're like, this doesn't even sound like The Exorcist anymore.
Yeah, it's very, very placid, very very serene, mm-hmm. Very comforting. But then at the same time, there is a slight irony in the music. And I think that's what they tuned in on. Because when you think of it, there's an innocent girl inside the body that's being possessed by Satan. And this is all she has, is the innocence,
mm-hmm.
And so that's what, it's not a scary theme. It's like there's innocence that's being, suffocated by evil, but it's still there, still powerful,
mm-hmm.
So anyways, that's what I got out of it when I first heard it millions of years ago. We did It Follows. Now we're going to go on to Candyman.
Yes. This is maybe my favorite
this
theme.
This was the required. James was like, all right. He can pick whatever he wants, but Candyman's got to be in here.
Candyman's got. I'm so glad you did. I have not seen Candyman.
Oh. Yeah, it's great.
And I love this the score. And what is it? Tony Todd.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Tony Todd's going to be in a movie. He's featured in a movie coming out very soon. Hellfest.
Okay.
Yeah. So Candyman. So it's so weird. When I first heard like the first like 4 minutes, I'm thinking my producer mind came in. I go, oh, this makes sense. Why bother hiring a string section when you just have a big choir? They choir folks are nice, and they're, you know, they bring baked goods, you know, and you know, probably just a change of pace. I wouldn't be surprised. There's got to be. I wish I got to see the movie to see what the actual decision to have a choral section that when you listen to it, it's like, oh, that's the violas. They're just playing an arpeggio here. There's the violins are coming in, and it's even laid out like a string section, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you have two organs, and I'm not sure. I don't think there's much percussion in it.
I don't think there is.
Philip Glass, there's a lot of percussion. And that's what I like about it is that he said, this is the palette that I'm going to have. I'm going to create my music with these two or three different colors. And come hell or high water, I'm going to get through it. I love it.
Do I know you?
No. No. But you doubted me.
Now I just don't want to know what the hell it's going to.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just trying to, Candyman, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Does a guy sells candy to kids and they disappear? I mean, what's going on?
There are bees involved.
There's bees.
Which is weird.
There's a hook hand.
Yeah, he's like a guy who was...
And there's sequels to this?
There are,
that delve deeper into Candyman's history. It's Tony Todd, and he was like...
It's a Clive Barker story. It's based on a Clive
Candyman
Barker story.
Candyman is a...
He's a deceased man.
Yeah, he's like a ghost. He's like, you know, when you stand in front of the mirror and you say Bloody Mary, and it's like the urban legend that she'll get you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like Candyman. That's Candyman.
You like look in the mirror and you say Candyman five times. They give you a lot of time to bail out, yeah, and then he'll appear.
And that happened in The Witch, where the kids would go Black Phillip.
Black Phillip.
And then all of a sudden, for some reason, the goat starts talking.
Yeah, so he's I feel like it's a horror movie that is also love story. It's like very kind of through the ages love story, but a very twisted love story, because
he has a love story with who?
It's
Virginia Madsen.
Yes. So the his whole thing is that he is the ghost. Is it accurate to say?
I'd say ghost
of a guy who, when he was alive, he was a slave who fell in love with a white woman, and then he was like killed, like he was lynched, and so that's his. And he was lynched by, they dumped honey on him.
Oh my god,
that's the bees.
Oh, and the bees.
And that's what the bees are. So then he, like, his whole thing is he'll open up his jacket and there's just like bees that come out. It's awesome. I love it.
it's really good.
And there's a lot of subtext in that movie about like class division and race division. It's really like there's a lot going on.
I gotta check this out.
I mean, it's a Clive Barker movie.
And this is an original story. It's not based on some.
It's based on Clive Barker's story. So he also did Hellraiser.
But these are his characters.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yes.
He didn't find like some book or a comic book or something like that to make it. He just came out very much like our dear friends the Chiodo brothers. They said, guys, you want to make a movie? Come up with an idea.
Just come
for
up
us
with it.
And he said, let me see, and they came up with Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I mean, how bizarre and creative
that
can
sounds
that be?
Like it'd be a comic book.
And it's like, you know, Frank Zappa talks about that era where executives would say, what do you got that's new? You know, and you know, the cigar chomping executive. Then okay, we'll make it. If it works, we'll do another one. You know, something like that. And I think maybe there's too much. You know, there's some good stuff being done. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think people are too scared. You know, because you're putting a lot out on the line when you're putting a movie out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about Phantasm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Phantasm. The movie Phantasm.
Yeah.
Who I met Don Coscarelli, and I never saw his movie.
Oh, man. It's a weird one.
It's a lot of fun.
I consider it, because we covered it on the podcast early on.
That was before we were doing
Did you have him as a guest?
No. God, it was just us talking about the movie. But I remember calling it kind of like the prog rock of horror movies. Because it's such a bizarre, like, surreal, kind of heady, cerebral movie with like just a lot of things going in and out. And so it's funny that we're talking about prog rock and I love the theme. It's great. It's kind of like Halloween in that I always have, like I was saying before we started recording, how much respect I have for directors who also compose their own movies, like John Carpenter, and in this case, Don Coscarelli, didn't he also like edit it?
He did everything on this movie.
It was like
he's younger
movie.
Than us too.
Oh, when he did it?
I think so.
Well, a lot of people are younger than us nowadays.
Yes, but Look at what you guys are doing. Don't sell yourself
short.
This
is short. Our Jaws, James.
Just don't sell yourself short, man. Because midway in the film, I hear some Frank Zappa influence.
Nice.
Speaking of which, some just bizarre stuff. Just like we're gonna just throw this in right here to shock everyone, and then. There's actually some Blue Oyster Cult. I don't know if you're familiar with the early metal band called Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh yeah,
there's some Blue Oyster Cult influences in it. I love it. I was listening to it. Oh, that's great. Because Blue Oyster Cult, they had some very good thematic development in their music, even though it was quote unquote rock and roll.
It's funny. We were just talking about Blue Oyster Cult how it's tragic that. The one thing most people know of them is "Don't Fear the Reaper."
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. There's tons of stuff. Dominant Submission. I mean, my band used to play most of their albums. Uh-huh. It was just insane. Then there's some influences of funk music, some George Clinton,
nice,
and some Steely Dan. So they got it all covered. In that movie. Now I got to see what the hell the movie's about. So, and here's another situation where their resources were limited, but that didn't stop them from creating something interesting. So, our next film, which I have not seen.
Yeah.
And I want to see.
It's
and they
a big
made,
one.
They made five of them.
If we're right? talking about or the six, right movie.
Oh,
no.
Saw?
We're on eight. There are eight Saws now.
Yeah, I know. It's when you were researching it yesterday.
I live under a rock. I don't know, the sun comes out in the morning or not. There's eight of them.
Yeah, you were researching yesterday, there were five, and then when you woke up today, there were eight of them. That's how
You think they did another two during our conversation?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yep,
okay, so we're talking about the very first Saw,
which
was done by Charlie Clouser, who is a member of Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah,
a band that I very much love. Trent Reznor is admire Trent Reznor very much. I admire his journey in life, and I admire his creativity. When you listen to someone, a composer's work, and you're just so intrigued, not by, just listening to it, not picking it apart, just listening to it and letting it take you, letting the music take you where the music is supposed to take you. You just like, you say, then you stop. So, okay, I have to know how this is done. I have to know who did it. How is it done? And that's always a great sign. The main theme goes from nothing, a little hammer dulcimer, you know what that is? Mm-hmm. A little hammer dulcimer, to this giant wall of sound, which is what the Nine Inch Nails thing is.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just so thick. And it's funny. At one point it says, there's a little bit of live and let die in this. Which is perfectly okay.
Yeah.
And of course, because he's with Nine Inch Nails, his use of distortion and grit.
Yeah.
Just when you need it, it's so definitive.
Yeah.
You
know? It's
not just a mess of sound. It's very, very calculated.
I would say that his score is probably one of the most important things to that movie, because that movie was made with no budget, and you can kind of tell sometimes, because like some of the ways they edit around things, there's in particular a car chase scene that they just filmed by shooting through the windshield and shaking the car and having like a fog machine blow, like you never see the cars in motion because they had so little money, but you hear this music and it like carries the film. It gives you so much in the thought, and
I guarantee they didn't tell the composer that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
he just said I buy it. It's a chase. It's the car's moving.
Yeah,
90 miles an hour.
Yeah,
no problem with that.
And it's funny because Nine Inch Nails is like industrial music. Yeah. That's kind of their genre. And like it feels like an industrial film. Saw it.
Yeah,
so, like,
for sure.
It's a perfect marriage
like
of
that
this
whole
music.
Film feels dirty. The music sounds dirty. Like it's all just. It all feels like there's a thick film.
And the
over
and the
everything.
Building that you mentioned is
he is
yeah
that's, he's the saw guy
yeah that's Billy the puppet
Billy, yeah
Although people always think that his name
is Jigsaw.
So
is it like Child's Play where there's a...
No,
that would, no,
he's not
that
alive.
Would be the best
That's
thing.
That's what a lot of people think.
Honestly,
that. He's just, there's a lot going on in the
if
Saw
I'm
movies.
Writing
there's
a,
also like a pig head.
Oh yeah, there's...
Like a random pig
That's
head.
The
this
there's
comes
a
play.
Lot of... A lot of
Well, who
things.
Wears the pig head?
Those are spoilers.
His helpers.
There's a lot of twists in Saw, and that's why I like that you described it as like building to
yeah,
something.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
Here's
what
I know about Saw.
Okay.
There's surgical. There's white background and surgical equipment.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
from the
things
posters.
That you weigh, things that you cut with the surgical equipment.
Yeah.
And it says Saw.
Yeah.
And it's like. Really nothing good happens.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's very
you know?
Bloody. Very...
And so it's just like one of those things. And I remember, didn't they come out in like 1998?
No, 2004.
2004? Okay.
Yeah, but then they came out with one every single year for 7 years.
Okay.
It was like a TV show. The production was live.
Now, did Charlie do all of them?
He
or?
Worked on the first three or four,
okay.
And those are really like...
The core.
Yeah.
He set the standard.
Yeah, yeah. And those like have the same crew and everything. And after that, they like kind of branch off. But I have a question, John.
Yes.
This might not be an easy one to answer or one that you don't think really has an answer, but is there someone who you feel is like the best film composer of all time?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of great
film
composers.
Yeah, because I always hate the question of, like, what's your favorite one thing? But, like, you know,
well,
maybe a handful or...
Okay, well, I can't say that they are the best music, but I know that every time he talks about his music and his process, he talks about it so simply and elegantly, and I go, oh, I feel much better now. It's John Williams.
Yeah.
You
know? Now, I was watching Jaws for the first time all the way through the night with my daughters, and we're listening, and all of a sudden... My oldest daughter goes, wait a minute, this kind of sounds like going down Diagon Alley. You know, it's like, you notice every time they were chasing after the shark and they had the shark on the run, there was this adventurous music, you know, it's just, you know, so you suspend belief. You go, oh, it's not going to be so bad. They're going to catch the shark. They're going to be okay. No one's going to get eaten and torn to pieces. This is going to be great, you know. So I can't say he's the best composer around.
Yeah.
Everyone has their has a voice to land. They have an observation, you know. My mentor, Bill Conti, I used to just listen to him like, wow, okay. Yeah, he just had the ways of talking about music, talking about what it's like to work in the career. Work in this career and what he had to go through and what, you know, basically is what, like, what are you willing to do? You know, are you willing to stay up for 2 days straight and make sure something's done and done right and have no excuses and know that in 10 years you're going to listen to it and go, ah, yeah, I did that. Accomplishment. You know what I'm saying? You know, everyone has. Randy Newman, when he talks about his process and things like that, he brings a lot to the table. You know, so I can't answer your question. I don't know who the best. There is no best. There is no king of film.
Of course
music,
not.
No. I mean, for the longest time, John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith were considered the deans of film music, and John Williams, God bless his heart, he's in his 80s and still going
performing
great.
At the Bowl every year.
Still performing at the Bowl, and he. You know, I think what now, you know, what's wonderful now, I think he just says, listen, I need 9 months to do this score.
Yeah.
Don't expect me to do it in 2.5. You know, and so that's giving him a lot more freedom to maybe be even more creative and leave us with something incredible.
Well, I think that's a great place to end this. I could talk forever.
Well, I want to thank you for having me. It's
yeah.
Really
oh, thank you so
an
much
honor
for
being here in your environment.
Yeah.
All of our toys,
basically
our creepy
sick
toys.
Stuff. Yeah, everywhere. There's a pig head over there.
Yes.
There's like stuff that, like, I think if the police pulled you over and they opened up your trunk, that they would ask you more questions.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
It'd be an
we
issue.
Had I forget who we had come over to like repair something, and we had to be like, just so you know, like, we have a lot of horror stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like weird in here.
Yeah,
we're
it's
cool.
Like a horror. It's like a Halloween shop.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I am honored that you had me. as your guest, and you guys are really awesome. Thank you for coming to my concert.
Oh, absolutely.
My God, it was so fun. Yes. Do you want to like tell people about that or your future plans for
oh,
that?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, yeah.
Please do.
Thank you for saying that. James and Chelsea were so sweet to come to my concert, and they did a wonderful video piece, and they got to capture the magic of the fans from Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
It was a fun video to make.
I feel like it's a theater full of my nieces and nephews. You know, it's just, I feel like it's a family affair because everyone was so happy. My two daughters and their friends came over, and that was the most rewarding part. We just hung out and talked. They wanted to see my dressing room. Wow, is this your dressing room? And it's got this little, you know, the lights on the mirror and all that sort of stuff. And so anyways, that was my most wonderful part. So I'm happy to report that we are in very healthy talks with the powers that be in order to make this available. It's like, it's content. Right? It's a concert live to film with Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It has with the Dickies.
Yes.
The Dickies are a part of the package.
Nice.
And it's being packaged in such a way that basically we've created content for the various orchestras throughout the United States, Canada, Europe, the UK, Australia.
Wow.
So so when someone's looking to program something interesting, this is already packaged. This concert's ready to go. All the things are in place to be able to put it in front of an audience. It's just a matter of an orchestra saying, "Oh my goodness, this would be great for our summer program."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or this would be great for Halloween. Oh, this is perfect. We'll have Harry Potter 1 week and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. People can come. You're required to come in costume.
But yeah, if you want Killer Clowns to come to you, which you should because it's so much fun, seriously, contact your city's orchestra, your city's symphony.
Yes. And who they can contact, KMI Presents. That's the organization that's doing all the bookings.
KMI Presents.
KMI Presents.
Okay.
Anyways, the fact that you guys were there was so awesome. And we love you.
We love you very much.
Keep watching all those great horror films because it's because of you that we're here.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And you want to keep the kill counts will keep coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much.
It. Yeah, thank you.
You want to wrap us up?
Sure, yeah. Be sure to follow Dead Meat on social media at Dead Meat James on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, I'm at Carebeck, C-A-R-E-B-E-C-C on Twitter and Instagram.
John, if people want to follow you.
Sure, I'm John. You can Google John Massari and everything will come up. I'm on Instagram, John Massari, Facebook, John Massari Composer, John Massari Film Composer, and Twitter, just plain old John Massari.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right.
Yeah. We'll be back next week with a movie review.
Yes.
But yeah, until then, I'm James.
I'm Chelsea.
And I'm John Massari.
Yep. And this has been the Dead Meat Podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Good night.